My next guest needs no introduction. Steve Forbes is chairman and editor-in-chief of Forbes Media, of which Forbes is the nation's leading business magazine. In addition, Forbes.com has become one of the world's most influential websites. His editorials for Forbes under the heading of Fact and Comment are widely respected, and he is the only writer to have won the highly prestigious Crystal Owl Award 4 times, which is a prize given to financial journalists whose economic forecasts for the coming year proved most accurate. He's the author of 7 books and a vocal advocate of a flat tax, returning to the gold standard, and the importance of unfettered capitalism, among other firmly held beliefs. Now, Steve will be speaking at the Money Show Orlando, which will be held this year at the Omni Resort, February 8th through 11th. Of course, that's in Orlando. He'll be appearing on February 9th, and I also will be speaking at that show on February 10th, and you can register for free at OrlandoMoneyShow.com or find out more at my website, which is StevePomerantz.com. Now, immediately following his talk, he'll be a panel speaking on how the new president's policies may affect your portfolio with David Kotok, who will also be joining me today for conversation. Now, at my talk at the Money Show Orlando on February 10th, I'll be discussing myth-busting your way to riches, speaking about, for example, how a simple investment in the wonderful S&P 500 may actually turn into a disaster for most investors. I'll discuss these and other investing delusions that prevent you from becoming rich. For more information and to hear this interview again, and all the many important financial topics we cover, don't forget to go to StevePomerantz.com. With the new president now in office, we want you to be prepared for the impact of the new administration and its effect on your portfolio and your financial well-being. So once again, I want to welcome Steve Forbes Jr., editor-in-chief of Forbes Media, and who himself was twice a candidate for the nomination of the Republican Party for president. Hey, Steve, welcome to the show.
Good to be with you, Steve. Thank you.
You know, in your December 30th commentary, you wrote that Trump's tax cuts should be big and bold. Why, in your opinion, is reducing taxes so important to create vigorous economic revival?
Because there's such a barrier to people moving ahead. It's not just that the government takes too much money out of your pocket, but also the price, the burden on doing productive things like productive work, risk-taking, and success are much, much too high. And we've seen time and time again in the past, when those tax rates are reduced, the economy booms, people do more, take more risks, and we all move ahead. A rising tide lifts all boats, as John Kennedy famously said.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether it's Democrat like Kennedy who cut tax rates vigorously, or Ronald Reagan, who did the same, the American people always respond. And given the huge tax burden the American people face today, I think Donald Trump must move aggressively, and I think he will, for a massive tax cut, even though a lot of people, even in his own party, are getting a little bit of a, what you might call, cold feet-itis.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. There's already seems to be some equivocating by Congress to delay or scale down the tax reductions. Why would a delay be so wrong in your view?
Because I think the American people must see right away that this new president, this new Congress is delivering and getting this economy moving forward again. And if you delay a tax cut, that means we won't see any real improvement in the economy till maybe next year or the year after. The Republicans will pay a political price, which will make further progress very difficult, and it will be an unnecessary economic delay. It's like having a great quarterback and deciding to save the quarterback for next season. No, use the quarterback now.
Now when he's hot.
And when he's hot.
Yeah, gotcha.
And one of the things, by the way, that Donald Trump has got to avoid is what some House Republicans are proposing as part of this tax cut, this crazy thing called the border adjustability tax.
Yeah.
Which would impose a sales tax on all the things we bring into this country. And so your price of a gasoline will go up 30 cents a gallon. The stuff you buy at Walmarts and Targets is going to go up. The price of automobiles is going to go up. Over $120 billion tax on the American consumer. And Republicans say, Paul Ryan says, well, we need the money for tax cuts. No, you don't. You should cut taxes, put a restraint on spending, and Ryan's own party members have come up with some big proposals on reining in spending and ending duplicative government programs over the next decade. but don't punish the American people. So this border adjustable tax has got to be killed in the cradle, or it's going to hurt the economy.
You've always been a vocal proponent of the flat tax. You've written a book about it. But now you're calling for two tax brackets, or you agree with this idea of a 25% tax bracket and a 10% tax bracket. However, in an interview you did in 2015, you said the problem with two rates is that they're like rabbits. They multiply. So why are you backing the two-rate idea now?
I see this as an interim step. You know, when Ronald Reagan took over, he had a big tax cut in 81, but he had an even more sweeping change of the tax code a few years later. So to get a tax bill through now, I will take two rates. I will take some simplification, a good cut in tax rates, but set the stage to get the economy moving, and then do more fundamental positive reform a year or two down the road.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, a flat tax.
You know, you had an idea. I think you were using Hong Kong as an example. You can offer the American people a choice. Either you take the flat tax, and then you don't get any deductions for mortgage interest and other things. Or you can choose the second method, which is to go back to, you know, the many different tax brackets, we'll say, and then use your deductions, but you leave the choice to the American people. Do you think that's a viable idea?
Yes. Hong Kong, as you mentioned, does a variation of that. And this way, people don't get hung up, you know, am I going to lose this deduction or that deduction? You know, you can explain to your blue in the face that you come out ahead. Let people see for themselves. That way, they don't have to trust us
mm-hmm.
or anybody else. They can do their own math and see, by golly, this new simple tax is the way to go. And what I think will excite people, if it's done right, the way we propose in our book, Reviving America, is a family of four, for example, with generous exemptions for adults and for kids, a family of four would pay no federal income tax on their first $52,800 of salary. And then above that, you'd only pay 17 cents on the dollar. There'd be no tax on your savings, no death taxes. You should be allowed to leave the world unmolested by the IRS. And I think that kind of a tax code where literally you could do your return with a few keystrokes on a computer or a piece of paper, single sheet of paper, would really be a good positive jolt to the economy.
Yeah, I guess accountants who do tax returns will probably not be quite so happy, but so be it.
Well, even though I'm a conservative, I would support job retraining for tax accountants, tax lawyers, and IRS agents.
My guest is Steve Forbes, Jr., editor-in-chief of Forbes Media. Of course, Forbes, we all know the great magazine, and Forbes.com. You know, Hillary Clinton had a proposal to raise capital gains rates to 39.6%, and then in a very complicated way, have them fall back to the current 23.8%. And I was wondering, why do you think they believed this would be beneficial to the economy?
She falls under the first. They don't realize that a tax on the people who take risks hurts risk-taking and therefore progress. But they also think that people who do trading quickly, let's say you want to sell out after a year or two, is bad for the economy.
Mm-hmm.
What they don't realize is you have different classes, different kinds of investors. You have venture capitalists who put in seed money, then want out and go on to the next venture. You have others who would do later stage investing, and then the ultimate investor who might want to hold it for 5 or 10 years or 3 years. So trying to have Washington dictate how long you should hold an asset is ridiculous and absolutely counterproductive. And the fact that she would have left the rate at nearly 24% shows that she learned nothing from the Kennedy tax cuts, nothing from what Bill Clinton did when he cut the capital gains tax, or George Bush cut the capital gains tax. When you cut that tax, the revenue feedback, as they say, is immediate. You immediately get more revenue. So I hope with Donald Trump in the next few days, couple of weeks, they'll get rid of the Obama addition to the capital gains tax. That'll take it back to 20%. And then in the tax reform bill, take it back to 10 or 15%. And that revenue comes back, not only comes back, it multiplies. Whereas with other tax cuts, it takes a little time because building a factory takes a little time.
Mm-hmm. You know, corporations have records amount of cash right now, and they seem to have trouble figuring out how to invest the money. So they're increasing dividends. They're buying back stock. Why do you think lowering corporate tax rates would create more investment if they can't find places to invest their money right now?
Because the returns, prospective returns, aren't worth the risk. Until Trump took over, what you had was a situation where especially smaller businesses were in a sort of a defensive crouch, wondering what new regulation, what new burden Washington was going to throw on them. And you combine that with a very uncertain dollar going up and down like a yo-yo, and it made perfectly good sense to sit on the sidelines. Banks were, in effect, punished if they lent to smaller new businesses, which is why lending to this critical area of the economy is stagnated. Another reason why new business creations are fewer than the businesses closing their doors. We need more door opening, not door closing.
You know, I know that you are a tremendous advocate for, as I mentioned before, unfettered capitalism.
Capitalism that has sensible rules of the road. You know, James Madison said we're not angels, so we do need laws. So we got to recognize that we are not perfect beings by a wide margin.
Right now, healthcare and especially pharmaceutical companies are coming under a lot of political pressure. Even Donald Trump has said that, you know, he wants to get pharmaceutical companies to start bidding for the sale of their drugs and so on, make it, I guess, more of a free market kind of segment rather than more government controlled and more monopolistic as it seems to be right now. And the sector really is taking it hard on the chin. It's significantly underperformed the S&P 500. So how do you see the future of healthcare, and how does this idea of having a product that so affects people's lives be subject to the ebbs and flows of free market pricing?
Well, the challenge we have now in healthcare is that we don't really have free markets. We have pieces of it. But the proof of it is if you go to a hospital and ask what a treatment's going to cost in advance, they give you a strange look because it means either you're uninsured or you're just plain crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everywhere else in the economy, you want to know what something's going to cost.
Right.
But if you want to know what it costs in healthcare, they just say, oh, don't worry about it. Insurance will cover it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it will and maybe it won't. So you don't have real free markets. And that's why we got to get reforms such as nationwide shopping for health insurance, where a lot of companies compete for your business. Pricing transparency so you can see what things actually cost in advance, and to get a real free market there. And in terms of new medicines, we do need reform of the Food and Drug Administration, which approves these things. They're still in many ways operating as if this was 1950, not 2017, and get a more efficient way of approving new medicines, because it now takes between $1 billion to $2 billion to create a new drug and get through all the clearances. So if you want a free market, we got to reform and positively the way we approve these new drugs so we get more of them and more competition.
Speaking with Steve Forbes, we all know him as the editor-in-chief of Forbes magazine and Forbes Media. He will be speaking at the Money Show Orlando, which is between February 8th and 11th. Steve will be appearing on February 9th and also be on a panel right after his talk. You can register for free at theorlandomoneyshow.com or find out more at my website, which is stevepomerantz.com. Steve, let's talk about fiscal stimulus. I mean, if Trump were to do, you know, what he proposes to do and we get some decent fiscal stimulus into the economy, the question that I've heard posed quite a lot is if these tax cuts, for example, are tilted towards the upper brackets, that the stimulus might actually be limited if it doesn't really kind of trickle down to the average taxpayer. Has the concept of lower taxes, this idea of lower taxes increasing government revenues, been discredited?
No. When tax cuts come in and the investments that result from them bear fruit, you get a huge increase in government revenues, which creates the opportunity for further tax reductions. Unfortunately, politicians too often take the money and spend it instead of returning it to we the people. But what trickle-down economics was what Barack Obama practiced, where they had the Federal Reserve try to pump up the stock market, keep interest rates artificially low, on the theory that would stimulate business and eventually workers would get some benefit. What Trump is going to do and what Ronald Reagan did was to reduce tax rates across the board, top to bottom, so that not only do you keep more of what you currently earn, but with the extra investment that results, you have the prospect of better jobs, pay raises, and the like, climbing the economic ladder of success as your skills improve. And that's what we badly need. So this top-down approach, no, what Trump is proposing and what Reagan did and other presidents have done, like John Kennedy, is just the opposite. Do it across the board, remove barriers, tax barriers, regulatory barriers, healthcare barriers, and by golly, things will really hum. You know, we've had a decade of 2% growth, which is way below the historic average. So we're due for a decade of 5% growth. I think we can achieve it if we get these things done right.
Let's talk about investments. You know, you've won awards for your forecasting prowess. And as you position your own money for the next year or next 4 years, what areas would you emphasize?
Well, I think one, investors should look at what actually gets done. One of the reasons we had a stock market rally after the elections, especially in small cap stocks, was the prospect of reducing the burdens on people who want to do business and create new jobs and reducing the tax burden. And it faltered in recent weeks precisely because of the news that Republicans might not be so enthusiastic for doing these big positive things. So the key thing for market performance now is what gets done and also what crises may emerge overseas. So they should look at creating the right environment. If the right environment is created, as Reagan demonstrated in the early 80s and John Kennedy did in the early 60s, by golly, the economy will do well and equities will do well. Areas to look at? One of the areas is various facets of healthcare. Right now, it looks like a hopeless financial liability, but as you get more of a true free market and effective safety nets, you're going to turn a liability into the greatest growth industry ever because healthcare is personal. High tech is always going to be an interesting area, a lot of casualties there, but if you get a good hit, you will do very well. Mm-hmm. And you should also look for, if these reforms get through, you should also look for high tech being applied, not just to things like better software and the like, but to more physical things like building buildings, manufacturing products, things like airplanes. You know, airplanes have been improving evolutionary in an evolutionary manner for decades. But I think with the high tech in the next generation, you could see truly revolutionary changes in the way we create aircraft so that you could go from, say, New York to Hong Kong instead of 17 or 18 hours in 3 or 4 hours.
That would be amazing.
Yes, it would.
Unfortunately, we are out of time. My guest, as I mentioned before, is Steve Forbes, editor-in-chief of Forbes Media, and of course, Forbes magazine, so famous and so important. Also, twice a candidate for the nomination of the Republican Party. So he's kind of been there. You've been through all the slings and arrows of being a candidate. So I guess the bottom line to me is that, in a sense, it's politics as usual, but Trump better step up to the plate and be a very, very strong leader, as I suppose we're all counting on.
Yeah, and I think he's indicated he knows he's got to do big and strong at the beginning, because the political establishment will eat him alive if he doesn't.
Steve will be speaking at the Money Show Orlando. He'll be appearing on February 9th. Thank you so much, Steve. I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you, Steve. See you then.
To find out more about this interview and to join the conversation, don't forget to go to stevepomerantz.com.